This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. I'm Mira Sivasuthi and it's Earth Matters. Tomorrow is World Animal Day, but we have little to celebrate. WWF reports that we have decimated half of our wildlife in the past 40 years. How have we destroyed our natural treasures? By clearing the land, polluting the waters and poaching wildlife to their ends. Illegal trading of wildlife sums up to $20 billion per year. Much of the animals had been poached to produce medicinal supplements, particularly to meet the growing market of traditional Chinese medicine. Leading the fight against illegal wildlife trade is Grace Gabriel, Asia Regional Director at the International Fund for Animal Welfare, better known as IFA. Lau Yahua spoke to Grace at the Regional Conference for Society of Conservation Biology in Malacca and learnt about the use of illegal animal parts in traditional Chinese medicine.
Grace, how do you get involved in conservation work?
Actually, it started when I was little. I've always loved animals. But when I was working as a journalist and I had the opportunity to visit some of the conservation projects, and one of those events actually was the turning point of my career. Farming bears for their bile was going on in China, and IFA persuaded the government to close down two of the bear bile farms and moved nine bears to a sanctuary IFA built in southern China, and I was. I went to this opening of the bear sanctuary, and as a reporter and just watching the bears coming out, and some of them have been in cages on concrete floors for years, for decades, and then coming out, and we built the sanctuary, has green grass, we threw fruit into the grass, attracting bears into the grass, and also there is a pool. But these bears forgot how it feels to put their paws onto the grass. And every time they put it on, it's like electric shock they brought back. And that was the moment I just felt, my God, what have we done to animals? What have we done to nature? And as a Chinese, and I was working in the US, and at that moment I decided, this is something I want to come back to China. I want to do education work and make sure more Chinese aware and want to protect animals.
Mm-hmm. So there was certainly a moment and an experience of reflection of what we have done. And indeed, what we have today, where animals are still being hunted and poached and exploited in many ways. One of the biggest threats to animal wildlife population is illegal wildlife trade. Illegal wildlife trade is reportedly a business that is like $20 billion per year. What is Asia's share of this pie? Is this somewhat lucrative pie? What is Asia's share in this?
Asia is a continent with a lot of biodiversity. But unfortunately, this is also a region that is a big market for illegal wildlife products and parts. And this market, it's easily exploited by people who want to make money from illegal wildlife trade. This crime is becoming a global issue. Animals can be poached thousands of miles away and trafficked in large quantities onto the market, and Asia is the market for many species which are used in traditional medicine, used as pet trade, as trinkets, as collectibles, made into all kinds of products, and this is. It is really depleting species and causing regions losing biodiversity.
Yeah, so certainly it is not an issue limited to just one continent or one region. Let's look further. For a trade to happen, we must have both demand and supply, a buyer and a seller. So who do we know the demographics of the, you know, the buyers of, say, animal parts? Let's just focus on animal parts then. Do we know who are the people that buy animal parts?
It's very difficult to be so general. Different species, different, even one species, different parts has different, attract different people. Just use a tiger as an example. Malaysia has tiger and China has tiger. China is also a range state for tiger. There are so few tigers in China, and China is a big market for illegal tiger products. And many of these tiger products come from surrounding other tiger range states from the wild. And even, you know, the tiger, there's the tiger bone, which traditionally was used in traditional Chinese medicine. And there is also tiger pelts, which is coveted by people who have a lot of money, who want to have a tiger pelt as home decor. So it depends on the species and on the region.
Well, just at this conference, I speaking to people, I get the sense that people often lay the blame on Chinese consumption of animal parts, say the traditional Chinese medicine, as one of the main drivers of illegal wildlife trade. Traditional Chinese medicine is a practice that's like thousands of years old. But do we know if there's any evidence for the actual medicinal properties of animal parts in, say, tiger bones in medicine?
Well, the thing is, traditional Chinese medicine is really experience-based medicine. It's not a scientific-based medicine. So if for people who don't believe in traditional medicine, they portray it as kind of a almost like a voodoo medicine. But people who are believers of traditional medicine, I myself, actually, I believe in traditional Chinese medicine. The reason I believe it is I feel that there are, in traditional medicine, it's a preventative medicine. And it basically is like taking a precautionary approach to health. And also, it's a medicine trying to achieve a balance within oneself, but also balance one with nature. And this is something that has come down for a long time. And also, in traditional Chinese medicine, animal ingredient make up 3% of traditional Chinese medicine. But even though it's only 3%, it's blown up. It's effectiveness. And in Chinese culture, quite often, you can't make a distinction between food and medicine. You know, we're growing up, we always hear, you eat this, it's good. You eat liver, animal liver, it's good for your liver. If you eat animal, you know, certain parts, it's good for your part. And that's not medicine. That's not traditional medicine. And so it's, I think there is a lot of confusion about traditional medicine, both within people who use traditional medicine, not knowing the impact this medicine is causing to biodiversity loss and species loss, but also people who don't believe it, the way they call it voodoo medicine or portray it as a voodoo medicine, which completely pushed that community away.
But must traditional Chinese medicine always use animal parts?
It has always used, it has always used animal parts, even though the percentage was small. However, there are ways. For instance, we did a survey in Chinese hospitals on bear bile use, and many of the doctors, in fact, they say they have moved away from using bear bile because bear gallbladder from the wild is very difficult to obtain and expensive. And the bile from farms are very unsanitary. It's not healthy. It's not, you know, it's not safe for prescribing. So these doctors have already found plants that have the same functions as bear bile in total prescription. So they are already using alternatives. It's not necessary.
Grace Gabriel, Asia Regional Director at the International Fund for Animal Welfare, speaking to Lau Yaohua. Up next, Grace reveals the operations of tiger farms and illegal wildlife trade syndicates. That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. Yaohua Lau continues his conversation with Grace Gabriel, who has been heading campaigns against illegal wildlife trade for two decades now. Grace is the Asia Regional Director of the International Fund for Animal Welfare, better known as IFAR.
Well, you mentioned there are now farms for both bear bales and also tiger bones. But even with the farms, but the demand is so high, and yet there are so many products in the market advertising, you know, tiger parts or, you know, bear components. I really wonder how many of those products are actually contain the, you know, real animal parts.
In fact, if you are quite often on the markets, you know, especially in rural areas, you will see people selling tiger paws, tiger this or tiger that, and many of them are fake. And it's still, you know, it's just people using that belief or exploiting that belief to spread myth, to further spread that myth.
Right. And that drives a demand. So where are most of these tiger parts obtained from, and who are actually the traders involved?
Actually, tigers were hunted in China up until 70s. And now there are very few tigers in the wild in China. If people are buying tiger bone, they believe that the tiger bone from the wild is a lot more potent than tiger bone from the farms. So actually, having tiger farms that breed tigers in large quantities in order to sell, you know, it cost possibly as little as $15 to kill a tiger in the wild, but it cost as much as $7,000 to raise a tiger, you know, to maturity, and then people. Consumers who want it want the wild parts. So this offer really big incentives for killing tiger from the wild. Mm-hmm. You know, in 6 or 7 years ago, all of a sudden, there were two nature reserves, tiger reserves in India. All of a sudden found that they have lost all of their tigers. There was none, no more tigers. Where did they go?
Did they all go to China then? Was that
the case? I'm just saying, you know, they were killed. Whether they're going to China, going to where, but there is a market in China.
In 2005, all the tigers in two nature reserves in India, about 20-odd tigers, were totally gone. Although we do not know where they went to, but could we assume that the loss of the tigers in India were due to the domestic ban that China imposed on tiger parts in 1993?
Well, actually, the tiger trade ban issued by the State Council has contributed to tiger conservation. And because after the trade ban, the Chinese government removed tiger bone and rhino horn from TCM pharmacopoeia and started educating consumers about tiger bone and rhino horn cannot be used in medicine anymore, and also started developing alternatives to replace them. And all this combined, it has reduced consumer demand for tiger parts. And that may have contributed to the recovery of more tiger populations in Russia Far East. However, during that same time, in mid-1990s, these tiger farms started emerging in China. And I have been to one of the tiger farms, and really these facilities, the facade is a safari park, and they use tigers to jump through fire hoops or do tricks and performing for tourists. But behind that is huge operation and a huge production line of tiger bone wine. In fact, in the cellar of one of these tiger farms is about 400 huge vats, each containing a tiger carcass. You ask the manager, and the manager pull out a carcass to demonstrate to you this is truly tiger bone wine. But at the same time, on the product brochure, they say, they don't want to be caught saying that they are selling tiger bone, because China still have the tiger bone trade ban. In fact, in early 2007, CITES sent a law enforcement officer to one of the tiger farms, and in the hotel lobby where he stayed, he saw these tiger bone products for sale. And he asked them, are you sure this contains tiger? He was told this is truly containing tiger bone. And then during the day, he asked his government official who accompanied him. And at night when he came back, the tiger bone were completely gone from the shelves. And this is just, it's a cat and mouse game. As I said, under pressure from these investors who invest in tiger farm businesses, government officials basically issued permits to wineries or taxidermists, given tacit approval for commercial trade of tiger parts.
One of the ways that authorities can stem illegal wildlife trade is to impose bans. Like the one that China imposed on domestic trade of tiger parts in 1993. How has the traditional Chinese medicine practitioners responded to the ban?
Actually, recognizing that the continued use of tiger bone and rhino horn in traditional Chinese medicine would damage TCM reputation and also prevent TCM from going into international markets. So TCM practitioners in China and around the world have moved away from the use of tiger bone and rhino horn. And in 2006, Traffic did the organization you're aware, Traffic did a survey in China using a prescription with containing tiger bone, and they visited over 500 TCM shops, and only 2% of the shops say that they can fill this prescription. So it is very significant when a few years ago, there was a coalition of groups. It's called the International Tiger Coalition, and which include groups from animal welfare, from conservation, from ecotourism, and also from traditional Chinese medicine. We came together petitioning CITES to adopt a decision that specifically said parties should not breed tigers for the trade of their parts and derivatives.
Mm-hmm. So the traditional Chinese medicine practitioners they cooperated well, so they understood, and that's very encouraging. But do we have any idea of the response of the public, the consumers, when they suddenly, I guess they cannot find, they cannot find any Chinese medicine products, tiger parts. How did they respond to that?
You know, if the consumers for tiger bone is very much these are patients. As patients, you listen to your doctor. So if the doctors say, we are using alternatives, we are moving away from this, you listen. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, bans, this tiger trade ban have really helped change a lot of consumer mindset and make them aware that and they understand, they know, at least they know why the doctor is moving away from tiger bone.
If we look at illegal wildlife trader today and compare his profession to say 2 decades ago, is it easier to, you know, to apply his trade today compared to say 2 decades ago?
In fact, a lot of the wildlife traffickers today came into this profession from another different profession. They may be trafficking drugs, trafficking weapons, trafficking other crimes that have higher risk. And in fact, I talked to a wildlife trader at one point, and he said, you know, there is no way I'm going back to, you know, trafficking drugs because it's just too risky. This is a huge problem, you know, corruption and lack of governance and lack of penalties or good or political will to address wildlife crime allows these criminals, these are criminals, and allow them to run free and do whatever they want to do and they can get away with it. And also, what they are exploiting is the public good. If it's resource, it's public resource. It's the heritage. It's our natural heritage.
You are saying that illegal trafficking of wildlife compared to illegal drug trafficking is lower risk and higher profits. But who actually gain most of the profit in this chain, in this trade chain? Who are the real winners, I guess, in this trade chain of illegal wildlife parts?
Mm. That's an interesting question because on this trade chain, the closer the commodity to the market, the higher the price. A poacher may get for an elephant tusk in Africa, a poacher probably get, you know, $100, but that tusk, when it reaches China, that tusk can be sold for thousands of dollars. And both World Customs Organization and International Police Organization have identified the people who are doing the massive volume of wildlife trafficking. A lot of these people are linked with international criminal networks. And because the profit is so high, and because the profit that they generate from wildlife trade or wildlife crime can then finance the activities of terrorists and also other violent crimes and organizations.
Mm-hmm. So they are not individuals. They are not working as individuals. Then they are actually syndicates, like highly organized syndicates that are capable of violence. Internet links sellers and buyers across the world with, you know, just a few clicks. Is online trading of illegal wildlife parts really rampant? Is it serious? And how has IFA used the internet to mitigate the consequences of illegal wildlife trade?
Mm-hmm. Yes, IFA actually have been looking at online wildlife trade since 2005. Around the world, our offices, we have conducted several global investigations. In fact, on our website, you'll be able to find several of these reports. And we are the one that brought this issue to the two CITES and to many of the governments around the world that they need to regulate. This is a real threat to species. And in China, we have, after monitoring the website and brought the attention to government authorities, in fact, they helped us brought in companies and internet marketplaces, and we discussed how to address this issue. And one of the website, which is called Taobao.com, and Taobao decided to ban elephant ivory. And in fact, Taobao banned ivory before eBay. We also persuaded eBay to ban ivory. Taobao not only banned ivory, it banned tiger bone, rhino horn, bear bile, pangolin scale, tortoise shell, and shark fin. And after Taobao banned the product, many other websites now have followed Taobao's lead and taking a zero tolerance policy against online wildlife trade. But once these listings are banned, people come up with all kinds of different names to evade detection. And so we have to constantly monitor website and identify these new names and help the websites produce a filter, if you will, so that when infringing, people try to put an infringing list on, it will automatically get deleted. A few years ago, our online monitoring identified a website which is selling hunting trophies and also weapons. And so we provided that information to law enforcement. After 2 years of investigation, they cracked the case and arrested over several hundred people and confiscated 900 tons of ammunition. And in fact, our lead got the official crack a case of illegal weapons manufacturing.
Do we know what the effects of the banning of all these listings on online trade?
We have been monitoring the website every 2 months, so we do have indications that shows that there is a sustained reduction of wildlife trade on the sites that we monitor. However, there is a caveat, because people can sell through these sites. So quite often they move to other sites, they move to other platforms, search engines like Baidu as a search engine. And then they even now move to WeChat, you know? And this is an ever moving, It is really, really difficult to control online wildlife trade. And we understand the challenge. And this is also something that we are talking with internet companies and technology companies to ask their support in helping us. We need to get ahead of the game and try to prevent criminals from exploiting this huge marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another tool that reaches a lot of people, and that's advertisement. And one really cannot talk about IFA without mentioning the very interesting, very creative advertisement campaigns that you have run. Grace, you have a master's degree in communication. Perhaps you can shed some light on one advertisement that IFA has taken part in, and what are the effects that have resulted from the advertisement campaign against wildlife trading? Mm.
In 2007, when CITES decided to approve a one-off sale to China and Japan, we realized that we really need to start public awareness education. So we conducted a survey in China, and that survey found that 70% of the Chinese do not know ivory comes from dead elephants, because in Chinese, elephant ivory is elephant teeth, xiangya. And people naturally assume that a person's teeth can fall off and a person doesn't die. And this is... So based on this understanding of the misconception, we developed the Mom, I Have Teeth advertisement. And that advertisement had instantly, the moment it was it came out, it was an instant hit. I was contacted by an Ivory cover. He told me he didn't know. And he says, I have many other materials to carve. I don't have to use elephant ivory. A young mother wrote on social media because she saw the ad in the subway stop the day she was wearing an ivory bracelet, and she was so ashamed. China's Education Bureau decided to take that ad and put it into the college entrance exam as a test, a language test. And that reached 9 million college applicants. And corporations in China approached us and gave us space in subways, airports, all over the country to put our ad. And that gave us, you know, $18 million worth of pro bono in-kind support. And so last year, after the ad has been running since 2009, in 2013, we decided to do an evaluation. And it was, we found that the ad had penetrated 75% of urban Chinese population, and it has also reduced the population who are most likely to buy ivory from 54% down to 26%.
That's really good. That's awesome. You started working, I guess. You got involved with conservation work since sometime in the early 90s. And so it's more than two decades of working on conservation. And illegal wildlife trade, humans are always the main players, and animals remain but passive victims. So in your work fighting illegal wildlife trade, what have you learned about humans and how we treat animals?
Yeah, I really look at the what are the motivations for this type of behavior? What is the motivation for consuming wildlife parts? What is the motivation for engaging in trade? And I really like this concept, because somebody said that there is ignorance, there is indifference, and there is greed. Those are the three motivators, and which is true. And our ad campaign showed that, in fact, Chinese are not prejudiced against elephants, and they are. You can change their attitudes and change their behavior simply by removing that ignorance from their minds. And there is also indifference. And indifference, when I think of indifference, we need to change the mindset of government officials and policymakers and make them take wildlife crime seriously, and make them tie this wildlife crime with national security, with the country's development, with the country's, you know, the health of its people. And if we can do that, we can get policymakers on our side fighting our fight. And for the people who are doing it for greed, the only way to stop those people is through very clear and unambiguous laws, making wildlife trade illegal, combined with vigorous enforcement and also meaningful penalties for violators. Then we can control the people who are doing it for greed. And also, not only this will control greedy people, but we will also stigmatize it. We really need to put a stigma on wildlife trade or on wildlife consumption in general, and that will eventually get society to move towards, you know, it's not cool to consume wildlife products.
That was Lau Hua Yao speaking to Grace Gabriel of the International Fund for Animal Welfare. You've been listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.